Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Chargers and the New York Giants have exchanged their draft picks.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Eli Manning and Philip Rivers.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 207, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. What a night. The New York Giants absolutely dominate the first round of the NFL draft with Abdul Carter, arguably the best player in the entire draft, arguably, with the third overall pick, and then moving back into the first round with the 25th pick, swapping the first pick with their second round pick and giving up two other third round picks, the 99th pick in this year's draft and the third rounder next year to take Jackson Dart. And then, of course, which we've spent the first 2 hours on, I'll still take your calls on it, 888-808-1019. But we got to talk about the New York Knicks, who, man, oh, man, what a game, what an atmosphere. I mean, this was edge of your seat, just excitement the entire game. And before we get into all of it, you got to just admit, right? And I know there's going to be a lot of Knicks haters or whatever, like, oh, it's this hard to beat the Pistons. I am uber impressed with how the Pistons played this game and how tough they are and the smothering defense and the feistiness and the physicality that this series has been played with. It has been an incredible watch. And thankfully, the Knicks came out on top 118 to 116. And ultimately, a couple of things. One, it felt like almost immediately, and you knew it had to continue throughout the game because we saw Karl-Anthony Towns score points early on and then kind of disappear late in the game. But it felt like almost immediately, as I was screaming about this head coach and I was screaming about the adjustments that need to be made, it felt like almost immediately all of the issues of game two, the Knicks came out and tried to address. Like, the rebounding was such an issue, and right from the jump, you could tell the emphasis on getting on the boards. And they are still out-rebounded in this game, 43-40, but you could tell right away the emphasis on that, and then clearly spreading the ball, getting the ball not only to Karl-Anthony Towns, but OG Anunoby, who early on in this game, I think he had 18 first-half points. Like, right away, a lot of the ills of game two, it felt like the adjustments were made and they were getting the ball to Cat at the elbow. They were getting open looks for OG, and he was also creating his own shot throughout the game. Much more of a, Brunson has 9 assists in this game, and it just felt like they played a much cleaner, much crisper, where they dictated the action of so much of this game. And yes, it was physical, and they were after each other. And there was a couple of fights, and Karl-Anthony Towns was in the middle of it. And again, I think Karl-Anthony Towns, the way he played down the stretch, the three-pointers he hit early on in this game, as they got out to an early lead, it evaporated quickly. They ended up tying the game at 20 after a six-point possession and a foul on a three-pointer that was deemed to be taken to the next level, and they got the ball as well, and they hit all three three-pointers, and then Hardaway hit a three after hitting all three threes, and he all three three-pointers, free throws rather, I'm sorry. And Hardaway early in this game was 5 for 5 at one point from behind the arc. He ends up finishing 7 for 12, but there were still some issues with leaving too many open threes. The defense early on was struggling, but ultimately, Jalen Brunson in crunch time or clutch time, however you want to put it, had a couple of drives to the basket late in this game. But Karl Anthony Towns is the story of this game for me. And the offense and the ball movement and running the offense through Karl Anthony Towns at times, OG Anunoby allowing to start creating offense of his own and not just standing around the perimeter waiting for threes. Now, he did take 8 threes in this game. Mikal Bridges shot 3 of 6 from downtown. The Knicks, another story in this game, 26 of 29 from the free throw, and that's including the missed shot on purpose, which the end of this game obviously got crazy. If you didn't see, they almost had one of the worst endings to a Knicks playoff game that you've ever seen at the foul line, where at the end of the game, with a 2-point lead after a miracle couple of threes, the Knicks should have blown this game out way earlier than they did, but made bad decisions. A tip ball on a jump ball that went right to Beasley for an open three at the end of the game to get it within a couple of points. But at the end, with Jalen Brunson at the foul line and a 2-point lead, the Knicks decide to try and miss the free throw on purpose with 0.5 seconds left, with the understanding of even if they get the rebound, there's no way they could throw the ball half court. That's better than hitting the shot, allowing them to get an out-of-bounds play where they could throw the ball down the court and, you know, maybe make a miraculous catch and turn and shoot. But ultimately, the Knicks do come away with it after, on the missed foul shot, the clock went off immediately. And instead of letting the 5 seconds run once the ball is touched, the 5 seconds run right off the miss. And inexplicably, and I guess this is the rule, I had never heard this rule, but in a situation like that, they just gave the ball to the Pistons without any clock running off the without any time running off the clock, and the Pistons had an opportunity to inbound the ball and take a shot. And now, because of the missed free throw, the Knicks were only up 2. There was a moment there. I mean, this was to the bitter end. Up until the final seconds of this game, the Knicks were battling with the Pistons, and the Pistons never backed down. Every time it felt like, both ways, every time it felt like the Pistons worked their way back to a tie game, the Knicks would go on a run. And every time the Knicks went on a run and took it up, I think they were up as much as 15 in this game. But anytime they got it back to 10, they go into half up 13, playing a really crisp first half. And in the second half, it's immediately a run from the Pistons. They get it down to 3 points. And you feel like the momentum's completely changed. And then the Knicks would go on a run. And really, Karl Anthony Towns hit every different kind of shot you could hit. He hit the classic Ewing shot there with a couple minutes left, where he kind of turned his on the baseline, turned his back to the basket, and pulled a fadeaway on the baseline. He was hitting uncomfortable shots. He was getting to the foul line. He hit 4 threes in this game. Karl Anthony Towns, after all the talk of the last couple of days of being soft and not wanting to be involved and just standing on the perimeter, Karl Anthony Towns, from the beginning of this game, made it a point to be a force. And now the question is, can he do it consistently? But last night, I thought Karl Anthony Towns, I thought the head coach, I thought even Brunson, with some of the slings and arrows that were coming his way after playing hero ball and having the offense be stagnant and just playing through him, I thought a lot of people answered a lot of questions, but specifically Karl Anthony Towns, who drops 31 points in this game. He has a big block. He has 2 blocks in this game, a huge block down the stretch. He has 8 rebounds, 7 for 7 from the line, and the Knicks were great from the free throw line. But to me, the storyline of this game was the offensive game plan was so much better, and Karl Anthony Towns was running the offense for a while and being successful. And they don't, and here's the other thing about the Knicks, right? And I understand if you're concerned about it's so hard to fight the Pistons and how are they going to beat the Celtics. The Knicks that we have not called, right? Last year's team was tougher. Last year's team was grittier. Last year's team was more cohesive. Last year's team had better chemistry. Last year's team had each other's backs. Well, the one thing I'll say is they have not backed down an inch from the Pistons. The Pistons have attempted to make this a physical series. The Pistons have gotten in their face. The Pistons have really played an excellent series in every way. Like I killed the Knicks after game two, and I'd love, you know, I would not tell you different if I felt like this is a miserable showing from the Knicks, who are getting, you know, outclassed by a lesser team, and or, you know, shouldn't even, these games shouldn't even be this close. The Pistons have played an incredible series. Like, even in this game, Cunningham was, you know, he ends up with 24 points. He wasn't as good as he was in game two, but you could just, the what he's able to do getting to the basket, hitting easy mid-range shots, 2 for 5 from three. But, I mean, they have Hardaway going off. He's 5 for 5 at one point, 7 of 12 in this game from downtown. Dennis Schroeder, I mean, what can you say? He plays 30 minutes in this game. He scores 18 points. They are playing smothering defense. You can't even screen. The Knicks are having a tough time setting screens with how on the ball these defenders are from the Detroit Pistons. I mean, Paul Reed steps into a role as the backup center and plays extremely well. Beasley, who really couldn't find a shot in this game, still incorporates himself. I mean, Tobias Harris, again, you know, was struggling in this game, but still defensively, like, and physicality-wise, like, they have really played an incredible series. And every time they need a big shot, they get it. Every time they need a basket, they seem to get it. And even down the stretch of this game, you have the fans in Detroit leaving the building. And I'll be the first to tell you, I started to feel sick to my stomach when the fans in Detroit started leaving the building. It felt like Miami-San Antonio. It felt like something crazy is going to happen, and we're going to be showing clips of the Piston fans leaving the building as they pulled this miraculous game out of their ass and find a way to beat the Knicks. Because, I mean, this game was just back and forth, and Karl Anthony Towns, to me, is the story of this game, as he was last week in game two, or earlier in last game in game two. He was nowhere to be found in the second half of game two. And from the jump of this game, it was clear that that wasn't the Karl Anthony Towns who was going to be playing for the Knicks last night. Game three was going to be a different story. Now, the question is, can he keep it up a whole series? Now, I never saw Wilt Chamberlain play, and I'm certainly not going to tell you that Karl Anthony Towns is as a dominant or good a player as Wilt Chamberlain was, but that was the MO. I watch all these documentaries. I see all this stuff. He would disappear at games. Game seven against the Knicks, he disappeared. Like, Karl Anthony Towns kind of right now is that up and down. At times he can be dominant, and within a series, within games, he can disappear. They need the Karl Anthony Towns they got last night every minute of this entire series. And if they're lucky enough to get through, which I think they will, every minute of every game against the Boston Celtics. Because we've seen him hit uncomfortable shots. We've seen him hit off-balance shots. We've seen him get to the basket. He's got incredible touch for someone his size. We know he's 4 for 8 from downtown. He's 7 for 7 from the free throw line. He's got to be aggressive. He's got to get to the line. He's got to take his shot. The offense needs to go through him at times. I mean, we saw Cameron Payne play a better role in this game. Hit come in, play tight defense, hit a couple of big shots. Like, I just thought, and Mitchell Robinson too. I mean, the defense he brings, you could tell, you could feel the difference with Mitch on the floor. He has a couple of putbacks with the dunks. His rebounding skills, you could sense it. Like, he brings a lot when he's on the floor, and he only played 16 minutes in this game. But ultimately, they did enough defensively, and the offensive game plan, and down the stretch, Captain Clutch, again, he takes over these games. He got 2 possessions in a row to build the lead up to 9. He goes straight to the basket. I mean, and his ability to finish around the basket, even at his size, is remarkable. And you got just enough offense from OG early on in the game. I thought Bridges hit a couple of big shots down the stretch. And at any moment, they can go to Karl Anthony Towns to be a dominant force. But this is, I mean, the atmosphere in that building was really incredible. It was really incredible. And the physicality. And again, the referees are interesting because it felt like they allowed a lot more to be played in the first half and then tightened the whistle a little bit in the second half. But still, the physicality that is allowed in this series and the defense that is being played in this series from really both teams, but the Pistons are all over you. They don't give you an inch, man. This is a much harder series than I think anyone would have expected it to be. And not just because the Knicks didn't play well in Game 2, and not just because, you know, the Knicks aren't up, you know, living up to their end of the bargain as a 50-win team. The Detroit Pistons are playing really good basketball. They are playing hard-nosed, tough, physical, never-say-die, and extremely tough defensive basketball. But, again, Karl Anthony Towns, everything we needed to see in response to Game 2, coming into Game 3 in the hostile building, they come out and gut out to an early lead. Karl Anthony Towns clearly is involved from the jump. OG Anunoby is much more involved in the offense. Like, it's fine if you're going to have the last few minutes be Jalen Brunson. It can't be the entire second half. And they did benefit from really playing with the lead. There was that brief moment in the first half where the Pistons took a four-point lead. But for the most part, the Knicks were playing ahead this entire game, which I think is it's much easier to play ahead against the Pistons than to play behind with the defense they're playing. So I think playing from ahead is a huge point that the Knicks need to continue. But that's why it's good to get OG Anunoby involved early offensively. It's good to get Bridges involved early offensively. Karl Anthony Towns, obviously. But they made enough plays down the stretch. They hit enough big shots. And they avoided what would have been an absolute debacle the final few minutes. And I know we're going to get, you know, hung up on that decision. I know the draft has kind of overshadowed that moment. That was like right around, you know, that end of the game. You're dealing with the draft. I got in my car. The trade's announced in the car. I'm frustrated. But, I mean, to end a game like that, I've never seen that before. And to have the clock table decide, I mean, that's pretty much what happened. I mean, in that moment, and again, I feel differently. I know I was just talking about it with Mark Alex Fliegelman, how he feels about it. To me, in that moment, half a second left, 0.5 seconds left, you're up 2 points, you've sunk the first free throw, you got the second free throw coming. I understand if you miss it, and Breen was all over it from the jump. Breen wanted that shot missed immediately. And apparently, you couldn't tell exactly on the television, but Brunson's like looking for confirmation from the coach, and he wasn't getting it. But I understand you miss it. It's a rebound and a chuck. It's almost impossible where if you make it, you get the long inbound possibility and a much better look, theoretically. But I'm sorry. I don't know. If I hit the shot, I'm up three and I can't lose. I know if you miss the shot 99 times out of 100, it's a rebound and a chuck and you win the game. But they were in a position because they missed that free throw where I'm holding my heart in my hand because there's a chance they could lose the freaking game on a miracle three. If I can go up 3 points, I'm going up 3 points. I know I'm probably different than most, certainly different than Breen and different than the Knicks because they chose to miss it. And it took a weird clock rule to change that. But to me, I don't like the idea of a miracle shot hanging in the balance where I lose the game. I understand that you could theoretically give up a better look, but even if I give up that better look, if it goes in, I'm tied. I don't know. Where do you stand on that, Fleegs? You miss the foul shot every time?
So normally I agree with you that I'm doing whatever it takes to make it so that I cannot lose.
Yeah.
But because of the amount of time.
Yeah, I know.
Like if there's 1 second on the clock, I even say make the free throw.
Yeah.
But in 0.5 seconds,
yeah.
If the clock doesn't get messed up by the hometown scoreboard operator,
yeah.
Who Cat joked afterwards, you know, gave his team a chance.
I know, amazing that's how. I mean, I wonder if teams are going to, I mean, the circumstance, that exact circumstance coming up seems highly unlikely.
And listen, it probably was a mistake on
no
the
doubt.
Guy's part.
Yeah, no doubt.
But for you to, if the ball hits the rim, to grab the rebound, turn and shoot, Like, I don't think you can get a real shot off.
Yeah.
Not a good in 5/10 of a second. We know it takes 3/10 to catch and shoot. So because of that fact, I'm okay with it. Again, probably 1 second where you might be able to grab the ball, turn, and shoot. I would say make the free throw. But a 5/10 of a second, it took the score or the timekeeper messing up and a fluky rule that none of us knew how to how you would execute that.
Well, I mean, I you know, at the end of the game,
and we don't even now know if they got it right.
I have no idea.
Like, I know Zach Zarba explained Jalen Brunson in the backcourt and how that was, they got it right, his momentum was taking him, so the fans in Detroit can scream all they want. The refs got the call there. I haven't seen any explanation on the timing rule at the end.
Yeah.
Like, when Breen said, well, obviously they can't let him retake the free throw, I was sitting at home thinking, well, why not?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because,
if the timekeeper messed up, don't you kind of have to redo everything? Which ended up being no.
I never thought they would.
None of us knew what the heck they were.
I know Breen said it immediately, right? But I would have never thought they'd allow them the free throw again. Like, how do you do that?
And they're also, well, I thought maybe because then they're allowing them on the sideline. Alan Hahn points out on the replay, it taking 1, 2, 3 steps before inbound. I mean, that was almost, he almost got to half court. If that's a good pass, like, that easily could have been a nightmare scenario.
No doubt. No doubt. And you were joking before. You said to me, we wouldn't have even been talking the NFL draft.
I don't think it would have come up once.
We would have just been talking about how the Knicks lost an all-time game.
And we'd be blaming, hey, you know, free throw or not, but it would have, again, it seems so wrong that what happened was allowed to happen.
Yeah.
At the Pistons get the ball on the sideline, not underneath.
No, I know.
And then the inbounder, I forget who, it was Dern, can take 3 steps towards the basket.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, I know. That was a weird situation. These are the moments I need to be better of, like, focusing in, because I can't get past just being a fan and I'm like, I'm barely even with it with my head.
I remember thinking, thank you, JD Bickerstaff, for putting a big man in there to throw that inbounds pass.
I know.
And not one of you guys who probably knows how to deliver a good pass.
I know. That's true. That was a bad... And for a second there, they had no one on the inbounder. And I'm like, what are you doing? You got to have somebody on the inbound. You got to make it a difficult pass. And then thankfully, starting Mitchell Robinson came running over. I was like, oh, thank God. I was like, the last thing we need is another Christian Laettner. But like, but then anything happens. I don't know. He gets fouled on the inbound. Now he's shooting 2 foul shots. Like,
well, and they said, like, Han was like, listen, you can't foul, but you have to defend.
But you have to defend. I mean, it was just, that
timing. I mean, that would have been something that we talked about here in forever.
I know.
And then especially if the Knicks would go on to lose the series.
Yeah. And then what else annoyed me too, in the situation where the only thing you can't do is give up a 3-pointer. To me, I didn't go back and rewatch it because I was like, I needed the game to end so I could drive here. But it looked like on the jump ball that Bridges bats it forward. Like, why would you bat it forward to the 3-point line to give Beasley an easy look at the 3. I don't care if it goes in. Bat it back towards the rim. Why are you pushing it forward to give it to them outside the 3-point line? So many different things happened to make that game not a laugher at the end. And I don't know about you, but I was saying, as the fans are leaving the building, I'm thinking, oh, good God. It sets up. Part of you was like, Alan Hahn was saying? Like, this... You guys haven't played a playoff game. This team has been remarkable in this series. What a great year. You were the worst team in the NBA 2 years ago, and you're leaving this playoff game. I'm thinking the stories of, oh, man, I can't believe I wasn't there when they had this miraculous win.
Even before the whole thing happened with the free throw. That happened, I had that worst thought in my mind of, like, the fans are leaving.
Yep.
Just everything narratively was setting up for this is going to be an all-time sports moment.
Yep.
Everybody, even if they think the Knicks got robbed, like, every NBA fan, basketball fan would be laughing about it forever. It happened at the expense of New York.
Uh-huh.
It would be funny, and it would be something that just, I mean, ruined us for who knows how long.
I don't know if I would have been able to talk about anything else. You're right. I would have been so annoyed if they lost that game. But it just feels like old school Knick playoff basketball. Like, this is extremely fun to watch. The atmosphere in that building, and I like it better as the road team. I got to be honest. We all love the Garden. Don't get me wrong. I love watching games in Madison Square Garden. The atmosphere there is crazy. I'm not saying this atmosphere was better, but there's something about going on the road and, you know, your team, you know your team's in this hostile environment, and the way that the whole thing started with a bunch of chippiness and you know, pushing, and like there was even one point, was it Beasley who has the basket and then points directly in OG's face? Like, it just felt like...
Yeah, after the dunk.
After the dunk, right, yeah. I mean, it just felt like this is... It feels like war, man. This series, it's a lot tougher than I thought it was going to be. I still think the Knicks are going to win. But as much as you could say, well, if it's this tough against the Pistons, how are you going to even... I'm not even thinking about the next series. This is fun. I mean, the Knicks really... You take the Philadelphia series last year and this series this year, at least... And I know this isn't what we're looking for, but we are getting some pretty friggin' excellent, exciting playoff basketball that we can really sink our teeth into. I mean,
that was objectively a great NBA playoff game.
No doubt. It was, I mean, so far I've, you know, again, I'm driving in, I'm watching the highlights mainly, so I can't be 100% in this, but I think last year you could argue the best playoff series in the entire postseason last year was Knicks 76ers. And I think the toughest, hard-fought, most entertaining series so far has been the Knicks and Pistons. I mean, these games are unbelievable. Every game is a dogfight. Every game is to the last minute. And I think Karl-Anthony Towns did himself a real... I think he answered a lot of questions. Now, he's got to do it more, obviously. It is the Pistons. It's only game three. He's got to turn around and do it again for game four. But I really felt like he showed his toughness. He showed his accountability. They ran the offense through him. He was hitting big shots and fadeaway shots and three-pointers, like, and hitting every foul shot. I was really impressed with Karl-Anthony Towns. 888-808-1019. Let's get to your thoughts on it. Pat in the Bronx. What's up, Pat?
Hi, Christopher.
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Well, I'm good. I was watching the Knicks. I wasn't watching every single shot, but I was watching it toward the end. And the Knicks did get a couple of breaks. Or at least one that I can think of is when Dorn is jumping up against Brunson. I mean, my goodness. And Dorn
he just knocks it out of bounds on the yeah. jump ball. Yeah. No, it was that was a terrible jump ball from him. I don't know if I mean, listen, the I don't know if they got any. I don't know if. I mean, the Pistons obviously got the break at the end of the game. But besides that, like, I felt like it's not that the officiating has been great necessarily. I think it's been a little disjointed in what they allow and what they don't allow, but I don't think it's been heavily sided, even though Tibbs had his complaints after game two. I feel like it's been refereed, you know, fairly fair, which is good as I can hope. I can't hope for officiated. I got to just hope for fairly officiated.
A couple of comments on that. Tibbs' main grouse was consistency in the refereeing.
Yes.
Now, after that first half, when there was so much physical stuff, it looked like there was going to be a street brawl in the stands again. It looks like Jeff Van Gundy is going to run into the, you know, and attack somebody by the leg.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the refs got a call at halftime. It's time to call some of these fouls.
Yeah.
I mean, the game should not be decided by anybody but the coach, the players, and the rules. And that last shot, if that's a rule, oh my goodness, I can't believe that's a rule. Because if we had lost, it seems
like a fine rule. Me and Marco were talking about this. It seems like a perfectly fine rule with, you know, 5 minutes to go in the first quarter, but it seems like a ridiculous rule when the game is hanging in the balance. Like, unbelievable. And I'm watching it now. The different sequence, like, tell me this isn't this series. I mean, how many balls have gone through Karl-Anthony Towns, Hart, OG Anunoby? How many balls have gone through their fingertips? How many sequences have we seen where a dribble off a foot leads to a steal, leads to a court course pass that has been deflected, that leads to a steal, leads to a pass up court, and leads to a block dunk? Like, that's the sequences we've seen in this game have been outright crazy. I mean, it's been, no one can hold on to a loose ball. It's all over the place. There's bodies all over the place. They're fighting. Like, it's been incredible to watch.
Third string center getting blocks left and right, getting him right under the basket.
I mean, yeah, there was a couple of, like, and there was one sequence late in the game where I was screaming, you know, you're up, you're trying to run clock, OG gets a rebound and tries to go right up with the 7-footer hanging over him. Take the ball out. Relax, you don't have to go right back up. Like, because they're not calling the fouls. You're going to have to get extremely hard fouled for them to call a foul and send you to the line there. And you're just not in a position to put the ball up. You got the lead. Throw it back out to Brunson at the top of the key and let's reset the offense. Like, there was a couple of things that were frustrating about this game, no doubt. I hate to, like, this many hours later to go through all the different plays. But, I mean, there was a couple of, it's just all over the place. Bad passes, and then obviously the Pistons and, Derrick Rose was all pissed off about, not Jalen Rose, I'm sorry. I'm thinking Tibbs. Jalen Rose is all pissed off on the sidelines because of a backcourt pass. Like, I never thought he had possession. You could even see he kind of takes his hand off it. His momentum is allowed to carry him over. It was an inbound on the Knicks side of the court, but you can always throw it back to the other backcourt, but you just can't get it in your side and then dribble it past. But it looked like to me, and clearly it was stated, that the momentum carried him over, which is fine.
And I wonder if Jalen knew that, and that's why he took his hand off the ball.
Yeah.
To make it clear that he did not have possession.
Yeah, I think he did. I think he noticed that it was like right at the line, and he took and Brunson took his hand off the ball. But there was a couple of weird things in this game, but I mean, part of the take has to be how impressed I am with the Pistons. I mean, Dennis Schroeder, he's hitting every big shot. Now, I know some of them are wide open. Don't get me wrong, and that's got to change. The Knicks are giving up too many good looks behind the arc. But he hits every big shot. And early on in this game, Tim Hardaway Jr. was 4-for-4 from three. He ends up 7-for-12. But Schroeder, really, the defense. Durin, Cade Cunningham is really showing. Like, he didn't have as good a game as game number two, but 11 assists, 24 points, 7 rebounds. Tobias Harris, couldn't buy a basket there for a while, but plays tough defense. I mean, they are just all over you. Beasley in this game, 2-for-10. He was struggling for shots. I mean, they shot 43% from three, but that's mainly Tim Hardaway Jr. going 7-of-12. So, but I mean, it is just a unbelievably fun series, and it feels better when you win. The Knicks come away with it, and Brunson down the stretch continues to just be, I mean, he's been incredible. He gets to the two straight possessions where he gets right to the rim. And I couldn't believe they let him do it. But two possessions, right to the rim, hits a couple of big threes, or just the one big three in this game. But Karl-Anthony Towns, even down the stretch, hits a couple of big shots. The fadeaway down the Ewing shot on the baseline was unbelievable. And he had one where he was, had to go to the basket and then hang in midair a little bit before being able to put the shot up that went in. He's able to get off these off-balance shots from weird angles and able to put them in. And defensively, he got a couple of key blocks. And when him and Mitch Robinson are on the floor, they defend the rim really well and rebounded much better in this game. So this was the first game where it felt like the Knicks dictated the action. Even winning game one, we all know it was the 21-0 run. Other than that, this series has been Detroit. And the Knicks answered off a disappointing game two, where they didn't rebound. Karl-Anthony Towns wasn't involved. The offense got stagnant, and they responded by going into enemy territory in Detroit, playing probably their best game of the series, always having an answer for every run Detroit had, and holding off in the end, including one of the worst decisions I've ever seen in a basketball game, or one of the more, troubling decisions that could have handed a victory to the Detroit Pistons. But instead, the Knicks come away. They now lead the series 2-1. And we'll get ready for a game two on Saturday. I'm sorry, Sunday. Sunday, April 27th at 1 p.m., a Sunday afternoon game for game number four. Knicks versus Pistons.
Your official station to talk Jets. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 2:45. McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. Open it up to the Knicks. We'll take your Knick calls here. The craziness at the end of the game. Karl Anthony Towns and his performance in this game. Taking over at times, which was much needed as the second superstar. The guy who was brought here to make a difference in this team. To be there with Brunson. Not to ride along with everybody else as they watch Brunson perform. To be there to be someone who can help him. Someone who can be that secondary scoring option. And at every moment this series, when he touched the ball and when he's taken it to the basket, when he's taken shots, he's looked that way. But he just disappeared for way too long in game two. I felt he came out immediately and played just a ferocious game. And the Knicks, with a very good, solid win number two in this series, take a 2-1 lead, looking to put a stranglehold on the series on Sunday. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Carmen in Linden, New Jersey. What's up, Carmen?
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
All right. I'm very good. Chris, I'll be real quick. I want to make 4 or 5 points about that ridiculous call at the end of the game at the foul line.
Yeah.
Number one. Tibbs was interviewed, and he made the comment. He didn't berate anybody, either the timekeeper or the ref, but he said that should never happen in a playoff game.
Yes.
Point number two. If the timekeeper, I thought that individual was a referee. I didn't think it was Hometown Cooking that did the timekeeping. I thought that was a referee like the referees on the floor. But I could be wrong, but you can answer that when I get done with these points. That's the second point. Third point. If Brunson missed that foul shot on purpose, and the timekeeper started the 0.5 seconds before anybody touched it, it should be, if the rule should read, I would think, it's like Brunson missed the whole backboard and shot an air ball for the foul shot, and they should have taken that ball out underneath the basket.
Yeah.
And besides that, not only did they take it out on the side, How the heck are they able to take three steps before? I would like somebody to show me where that rule is in the rule book. Rule should be shown.
I don't think it exists.
I don't
disagree with you. It absolutely should have been under the basket, and he absolutely should not be able to move. I don't know how you get the benefit of being closer to the basket and be able to, move around the outstretched arms of. Yeah, I don't know what else to do but to give the Pistons the ball. I got to be honest with you. Now, I don't know if there should be a clock runoff, which theoretically could have ended the game. Like, if the rule, it makes sense to me that the rules say there's a second runoff. Okay, well, that's the end of this game. Some games it wouldn't be if there was 2 seconds left or whatever. But, so there could theoretically be a clock runoff for me. But ultimately, I don't know what else you do. I got to be fair. I don't know what else you do but give Pistons the ball. So
I agree with you, but I just want to say
I agree
this
the circumstances of how they got the ball and that no time comes off the clock, and that you could benefit, that the home team could benefit in that way from the timekeeper
messing up.
Now, again, I just did a quick Google search because I wasn't sure myself. It's two trained timekeepers that are, I believe, employed by the team, but they do have to be authorized by the NBA.
Oh, but they are employed by the team.
Like, it's an official scorer for baseball, kind of, where they work for the team and they work all the games at that building, but they are approved by the MLB. They are approved by MLB. Same thing here. They work the Pistons games. They're employees of the NBA. And maybe the Detroit Pistons, but they work all the Piston games, but they are approved by the NBA.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. Like Tim said, that should never happen.
No.
And if it's not a referee and they are approved by the NBA, I don't know when he started that clock. He may have started that clock as soon as it left Brunson's hand.
It looked like he started the clock once it hit the rim.
Okay.
That's when he started the clock.
I actually thought, and they should know exactly, but that's not the rule. I thought if it did hit the rim, I thought that's when it started, but it doesn't start until you touch it.
Correct.
Like an out-of-bounds pass.
Yes.
Until somebody touches the rebound.
Correct.
That's why 0.5 seconds, they wouldn't have enough time to shoot.
Right.
I really would love to see that rule in writing. It's got to be printed out. I don't believe that they would get it on the side and that we'd get three steps.
Yeah, so, I mean, I understand. And to me, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where the, you know, that's such a unique circumstance that it's hard to even, like, think that the referee should have the rule book knowledge, like, right at the tip of, I know you're supposed to know every single rule if you're the referee. What do you do on a final second free throw, intentional, you know, a missed free throw where the clock goes off too early? Like, I don't know. Like, I'll give him a break on that one a little bit, but to me, it's just common sense. Why isn't it under the basket? It happened at the rim. Why would you move them closer, and why would you let them move? I completely agree. But I don't know what else they do but give the ball to the Pistons. I mean, you know, Breen said immediately, well, you're not going to have him reshoot the foul shot. I agree. I don't know how you let him reshoot the foul. I don't know how you just say, whoopsie, do over. Like, I don't know.
You could do a jump ball.
You could do a jump ball. That's not the craziest thing either. Like, that makes sense to me, jump ball.
But I'm with you. If you're going to give the ball to the Pistons, it has to be underneath the basket.
Has to be underneath the basket. Has to.
And the inbounder can't move.
No. The inbounder should not be able to move his feet. Totally agree.
Almost maybe treat it like an out of bounds or as if the free throw had been airballed.
Right. Right.
Or there's a lane violation or something.
I totally agree. They should not be able to, it should not be treated on the side with the ability to move.
Well, and then if it's under the basket and he moves side to side, that's fine.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, but that's such a crazy circumstance that it's hard to, like, I don't know, it's hard to scream about it. Now that they've won the game, I feel a lot less passionate about it. But, like, yeah, it's crazy that those things were allowed, and it should never happen in a playoff game. And those two guys, I don't know if, like, I wonder, like, do they take that guy off the clock for game four? Is he allowed to keep his position as the timekeeper?
You have to investigate it, right? Because Kat's even joking that it was a little hometown cooking.
It directly gave them a chance to win a game that they had no chance to win. I mean, if someone knew the rule and said, hey, look, if we just blow the buzzer early, they're going to get the ball out of bounds with a chance to, you know, win this game. I don't think that was nefarious like that, but it could be. But that was crazy.
Would that have been the most epic New York sports moment of our lifetimes?
That would have
definitely in terms of controversy, right?
If they would have lost that, if that pass to Cunningham didn't go too far, he grabbed it and threw up a prayer that went in, and the Knicks lost that game. It might be. Now, I still think the Knicks could go on and win the series, but if they lose the series to like that, but that might be the worst loss. When you take into the circumstances and the worst feeling screwed that any New York team has ever been. I can't think of another loss where you would have felt more completely screwed. Because that's the hometown timekeeper setting off an early horn and them directly benefiting from it and hitting a miracle shot. I don't know if there's another a circumstance of a playoff game that I would have felt more screwed. I mean, bad calls in baseball, right? Was it the 85 World Series? Cardinals, Royals, and the famous play at first base? Or, you know, different things like that. We see bad calls all the time. But to have a horn go off early that turns a guaranteed win into a loss would be... I can't think of another scenario.
Like even controversial stuff, Jeffrey Mayer, the Angels double in 09. None of it was like end of game changes the result.
Right. No. Not in the last few seconds.
Even the Tuck rule, as bad as that, like it doesn't change the result of the game in that exact moment.
You're right.
85 World Series is the only thing I can think of.
Yeah. I can't think of another thing where it would have, like, the 85 World Series was on the final play, but still, that's just a bad referee call. You see them all the time. Or a bad umpire call. This would have been crazy. Elo in Montclair, what's up, buddy? How are you?
Yeah, how are you? Good morning.
Good morning.
I heard you say just a few minutes ago that you didn't see any choice but to give Detroit the ball.
I don't know what else you can do. I got to be totally honest with you. I mean, I guess a jump ball or...
yeah, a jump ball or a do-over.
I don't know how you could reshoot the foul shot. I don't know why.
You have to, right?
It happened after the missed foul shot, though. Like, it happened after the issue took place after the missed foul shot. It's not like it was during the missed foul. It was like, I don't know. Like, how do you let him shoot the foul shot?
What do you mean after the miss? It's not even a play if it's an official error. It's an error on the part of the bench, so that has to be done over, or it's a jump ball. You're right. Those are the two options. But it definitely shouldn't be like you penalize the shooting team.
Well, again,
right?
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's not
penalize the shooting team in that situation. I'm not asking.
Yeah, I mean, I guess giving them the ball technically penalizes them. It's a rule that probably isn't thought of for the final seconds of a game, where under most circumstances they're going to get that rebound. I mean, they do that in football sometimes too, where I don't know, they presume who's going to recover the football, or I don't know the. Like, they're going to get the rebound. The Knicks aren't even attempting the rebound. Like, it's just, I don't know what else you could do. I guess a jump ball.
The game's over.
I guess I just can't imagine them reshooting the foul shot. I just can't imagine them reshooting the foul shot. Because, again, the horn and the issue is after he misses the foul shot. It's an untimed play. But it did take place. Like, I can't just pretend it didn't happen. I don't know. Maybe I could. I don't know. Maybe if that's what they said, I wouldn't be thinking how weird. Like, in the moment, I just thought, well, they can't reshoot the shot. I thought the same thing Breen thought. I was like, they can't reshoot the shot. I guess a jump ball makes the most sense. But you certainly have to have it under the basket. Or even, I don't know, could you just make it, as crazy as this sounds, could you just give them the basket and then give it to them as if it was a made free throw? That doesn't, I mean, I don't know.
I think that's even worse than replaying the free throw.
That's penalizing. Yeah, that's, I don't know. What would you do? Jump ball?
I would think the jump ball, but I don't think that there's a byline in the rule book that says with 0.5 of a second in a playoff game and a 2-point game. I think this is basically written like, look, if this is an inadvertent, just side out.
Yeah.
You shot the free throw, you missed it. They don't expect you to intentionally miss
it. No, I understand. Yeah.
So I think it's why it's just a weird.
That's what I was just saying. Like, I don't think it's a rule designed for some weird happening in the middle of a game that you can't predict it to be that scenario. So I don't know what else you do but give them the ball. Like, I don't know. I guess you could have a jump ball.
Again, jump ball makes sense because it's still possible to get a rebound off a free throw.
Yeah, I think that's probably what the rule should be. It should be a jump ball. But I thought the Pistons were going to get the ball. I thought maybe you could take some time off the clock or something. What's the minimum is 0.2 seconds to get a shot off, right?
For catch and shoot?
Yeah.
3/10.
No, 3/10. Yeah.
So then just make it 3/10. I don't know if that would have mattered, but, I don't know.
Well, I mean,
take 2/10 of a second off the clock.
But again, I don't think in the rule book, then you're making a judgment call on the fly. I don't think in the rule book you're allowed to take time off the clock at that point.
Yeah.
Which is why the missing the free throw, because that was, you and I had this conversation all day, which is why missing the free throw makes sense.
And don't,
for the simple fact that you can't, in 0.5 of a second, you'd never be able to corral a rebound and then throw it the length of the court.
No, I understand. It's
an impossibility.
I just hate the idea of possibility of losing. I want to make the 3 points, but I get it.